We have a thoroughly global lineup on this Wednesday. Padraig Harrington is trying to nail down the Charles Schwab Cup Championship this week. The Pride of Ireland is stopping by to run the numbers on his chance of success. And South Africa's Erik van Rooyen is defending on the PGA Tour down in Mexico. He'll join us to look back at what was the most emotional win of last season. And an American icon is stepping away. Brittany Lincecum has announced her retirement from full-time competition. Her exit interview will be right here. Golf Today starts now.
Golf Today.
Welcome into Golf Today. I'm Eamon Lynch alongside Anna Jackson. We may be in November, but there's still a lot at stake in the PGA Tour. 3 weeks left in the season. A lot of guys fighting for status and for priority rankings heading into 2025. And that matters a great deal since it's going to be a lot harder to keep that card for 2026 based on where the PGA Tour is going with an upcoming vote.
Yeah, it's like a lot of sports that we see at this time of year. It's not always sort of the title race that we're focusing. It's also the relegation battle as well. And it's a tough spot that a lot of the players are on. By the way, we have got such a great lineup of guests today. Padraig Harrington is going to be on. He's going to be talking about the top 36 players who just get to keep their cards on the Champions Tour and how stressful that is. But imagine being at the peak of your career and trying to keep on to your playing status at the moment. So our first guest, Eamon Lynch, is a perfect example of that. Erik van Rooyen came in to last year in Mexico, defending this week as the 125th man on the bubble. I can't imagine the stress that that would have felt.
Well, he certainly delivered in a manner that, you know, he ought to be exceptionally proud of what he did last year, particularly in the circumstances. But he shot 27 under par, under a tremendous amount of both professional and personal pressure last year. It was, to me, the most inspiring win of the season.
Yeah, OK, well, let's find out more because he is standing by. So just a quick reminder, the PGA Tour is in Mexico this week at Los Cabos for the Worldwide Technology Championship, and you can catch that live first-round coverage tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern time. So let's just take a quick look at the upcoming PGA Tour schedule and what is left as part of this FedEx Cup Full Series. The guys are in Mexico this week, then they head to the Butterfield Bermuda Championship and then on to the RSM Classic as well. So still three events to come. But let's just flash back to this time last year when Erik van Rooyen shot a final round 63 to earn the win and secure his tour card for the following season. The victory was extra special because Erik was playing for his friend and college teammate, John Trasimar, who had been diagnosed with cancer. And after the win, it was a very emotional scene.
How are you able to be so calm when the stakes were the highest?
Sorry. I was calm because there's bigger stuff in life than golf. If you look at my ball, we've got, you know, there's a little music note. It's a little faded now, but there's a little music notes on there and initials JT, and it's for John Trasimar, our best friend, who's got melanoma and he's not going to make it. And every shot out there today was for him. And when you're playing for something bigger than winning some silly trophy, you know, it puts things in perspective. And at the end of the day, whether I won here or whether I lost here, it really did not matter. So, yeah, you know, when something motivates you like that, whether you make a pot or miss a putt, who cares?
You two guys were college teammates. You mentioned John was one of your teammates at Minnesota. How did you channel that emotion and not let it drag you down and have this beautiful result?
It dragged me down. You know, after Friday's round, I shot, I think, what did we shoot Friday? 8 under?
4-8.
8 under on Friday. And I get to my hotel room and I just break down in tears, you know? So it wasn't that calm all the time, but when I step onto the golf course, I've got a freaking job to do. And that's what it comes down to at the end of the day, do your job. And now we can celebrate and cry and do whatever you want. But until that last putt drops, you know, it's focus and it's do it for Trazzy.
If John's watching right now, is there anything you want to say to him and his family and your Golden Gopher family?
Just we love him so much, and I'm still sort of in disbelief what he's going through, and I wish I could take all his pain away, but we're flying up to Minnesota tomorrow to go and see him on Tuesday morning. I'll give him a high five then.
1 year later, I'm so pleased to welcome Eric onto the show. Eric, even now watching that back, it's still so emotional. And I don't think there was a dry eye in the house when we watched you win in Mexico last year. As you look back now, what are your emotions as you reflect on that moment and that week?
Well, I haven't watched that moment in a long time, and I'm slightly emotional right now as well, just listening to that. So, I arrived here on Monday with mixed feelings, almost bittersweet in a sense. So happy being, defending champion, but lots of memories came flooding back. I can't believe it's a year since we've lost John. So, like I said, bittersweet.
Eric, you talked after that victory about how golf really wasn't that important in the big scheme of things, given what was going on in John's life at the time. How hard is it to keep that kind of perspective as more time goes by? Because you are in a high-pressure environment week to week where it's very easy to lose sense that maybe golf isn't the most important thing in life.
Yeah, it's hard to channel those feelings, for such a long time. That was an incredible emotional week. But I think, John's memory would remind me of just keeping that kind of perspective. But it's hard to channel that week, especially at every PGA Tour event. I mean, we pour our hearts and souls into this game, and this game means a lot. But when something like that happens, it's just a reminder that, even though this means a lot, it doesn't really matter.
Personally and professionally, Eric, you had so much going on that week, outside of all the personal emotion as well, the pressure that you were playing under, being right on that bubble, the top 125, you were 125 in the FedEx Cup standings. What did you say to yourself coming into that week, and how much did just everything that sort of came together enabled you to produce what you did by the end of it?
Yeah, it was quite a stressful part in my career. I'm obviously now in a bit more of a comfy spot, I guess. But it was really stressful. You're trying to keep your card. I wasn't playing great. And then Wednesday morning before the Pro-Am, your mate texts you that. So it was just a roller coaster week. But once that happened on Wednesday, the goal was to get enough points that week, just so I could go home and see him. I wasn't really planning on winning. I was hoping just to kind of throw my name in the hat on Sunday, and then obviously things transpired the way they did. So it's really stressful. It was hard to juggle all of that. I know how some of the guys are feeling here this week. I'm thankful that I'm not in that position this year.
You're in a different kind of bubble this year, Eric. Obviously the top 60 in the FedEx Cup get into the first two signature events next year after the Century Championship. You're currently 67th. Is that on your mind at all this week in trying to make that top 60?
It is on my mind, and it's been on my mind through this fall. At the same time, I feel like it was quite a long season for me. I traveled quite a bit over to Europe as well to play in the DP World. So I really want to get into those first two events, at some point I needed to press pause a bit as well and just be home and try and be a dad and try and be a decent husband and, get a bit of rest in. So I haven't played a ton this fall. This will actually be my last event on PGA Tour this year as well. So if I get into the top 60 and I can stay there through RSM, I think that'd be great. But, there's so much golf to look forward to next year that I want to give myself the best chance to succeed.
Yeah, you're in a nice position heading into next year, Eric. But as we mentioned, you have certainly been one of those guys who knows what it's like to play on the bubble and the stress that comes with. I'd be interested just to get your thoughts on this proposed PAC memo that came out last week, just about the idea of reducing the number of players on tour and sort of just taking away playing opportunities for players who have been in that situation. What is your initial reaction to this proposal?
I feel sorry that that's perhaps the route they want to go. I started my career all the way on the Sunshine Tour, all the way to Challenge Tour, then DP World, and eventually got my way to America. So I've played all over the world. And at the end of the day, they're making it so hard for these guys to break through, and I think you're going to miss out on a lot of really good storylines. I understand that the big names in the game is what pulls the viewers, but yeah, I think you're going to miss out on some beautiful storylines if you keep cutting people.
Yeah, it's an interesting topic, Erica. Really good to hear your thoughts. Well, it's really good to see you as well back in Mexico this week. I'm sure it's going to be a bit of a roller coaster for you, but we wish you all the best and enjoy the week out there.
Thank you so much, guys. Take care.
Okay, well, let's just take one more look at that glorious moment for Erik van Rooyen last year in Mexico. A win that meant so much to him. And so much to us as well. It was a joy to watch. We will be back after the break. Well, let's take a look at what is happening this week as the Rolex Series returns. You've got three Rolex Series events already in the books, with Rory McIlroy winning the Hero Dubai Desert Classic. That was in January. Then, of course, Bob Mack taking home the title at the Genesis Scottish Open in July. Billy Horschel victorious at the BMW PGA Championship. And then this week, the DP World Tour is in the Middle East for the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship. And then the Rolex Series concludes in November with the DP World Tour Championship. So, this week, we are in the Middle East for the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship. It's a Rolex Series event which moved from January to November and is the first part of that two-week DP World Tour playoff, with the top 70 available players on the Race to Dubai standings in the field. And coverage begins tomorrow at 2 a.m. So let's just check out who is in the field this week. We've got a slew of European Ryder Cup players, and Tommy Fleetwood, Tyrrell Hatton, Shane Lowry, Justin Rose, Rory McIlroy as well, a couple of Aussies in Adam Scott and Min Woo Lee. But for Rory, with a win this week, he would finish the season as the DP World Tour's top player for a sixth time. And we learned he's had a busy few weeks preparing to finish strong as he met with the media earlier today.
Yeah, so I sort of committed after the Dunhill that I wasn't going to watch my ball flight for 3 weeks. So locked myself indoors in a swing studio for 3 weeks and just hit balls into a blank screen or a net. And just focused on my swing, focused on the movement of my swing, focused on some of my body patterns, I guess. And, you know, just had a live feed on a TV in front of me of where the club was, and sort of just trying to get the reps in of making the motion that I want to make. And then over the past 10 days now, so from last Monday, started to see the ball flight and, you know, get a bit more comfortable with what the ball was doing in the air, but still trying to, you know, focus on, the move that I want to make. So, but I think those 3 weeks in the sim have been important. I haven't had time to sort of do that over the past 18 months. So I thought it was important to get in there and do that. And for me, that's the only way that I'm going to make a swing change, because if I just hit balls in the range, I'm just going to react to whatever ball flight I've just seen. So to not see the ball flight for a while, I think, has been really important to try to implement some of those little changes. And it's definitely something that I'll continue to do after these 2 weeks into December and going into the new year as well.
Obviously, you've tried Seve, and to pass him would be great. Well, what keeps you so interested in the Race to Dubai? Well, what is it? Is it that the legacy of that whole, you know, thing of getting to beat Monty, or?
Not necessarily that. Even though that would be nice. I pride myself. I'm a European player. I would like to go down as the most successful European of all time. Obviously, Race to Dubai wins would count to that, but also major championships, and, you know, hopefully I've got a few more Ryder Cups ahead of me as well. So that's something that I would like to, you know, I think that's a goal that is quite attainable over the next 10 years. And, you know, I'm very proud to be from Europe and have sort of, played on this tour and played on this tour consistently. And it's something that, you know, I'm very proud of. And I just think of the greats of European golf that I grew up watching, whether it was Faldo or Woozy or Langer or, you know, the sort of the really, you know, the heyday of the European Tour in the 90s, I guess. And yeah, that's, you know, that was, I remember when I got my, not even my European Tour card, I remember when I got my first money clip just as I signed up to be a member, and it was a really proud moment for me. So it's something that I've always been proud of and something I want to, you know, continue to do.
Rory, I'm not sure if you've seen, but there's been a few reports of done deals and negotiations being successful and reaching the conclusion of you. Can you shed any light on that?
It's the first that I've heard of it. I know Jay was in Saudi Arabia last week at the FII and was having some meetings, but I think I would have heard if there was. So I know there's a, you know, I know he's briefing the transaction committee tonight. So maybe some news comes out of that. But as far as I'm aware, I haven't heard a thing.
Would you be surprised if it was that? Because there seems so many loose ends.
Yeah, I would. But then obviously, given today's news with what's happened in America, I think that clears the way a little bit. So we'll see.
There's probably bigger things at play with that result, you know, more important things. But if it, the DOJ was certainly more amenable, that would be a big, big moment, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be. It would be a huge moment.
Okay, well, once again, a pretty open press conference by Rory McIlroy there, not just about his swing changes, but also the state of the game. And he had some kind of quite bold shouts to make now with the new president that we have.
Yeah, I mean, that was a reminder that Rory doesn't always have to answer the question that he's asked, particularly if it's going to be construed in some cases as some kind of commentary on what was a pretty polarizing election. It's very possible that the DOJ may take a more flexible approach to any proposed deal between the PGA Tour and the Saudis, but it's a valid question as to whether or not that influence is actually welcome at this point. And surely there are bigger priorities in the United States than ensuring that more money actually goes into the pockets of professional golfers. You'd like to think the Department of Justice has something else that might be higher on the priority list in there. But to me, it's just an example of when Rory ought to sort of avoid a subject. As much as we in the media love to actually hear somebody answer honest questions, with the perception that exists of professional golfers these days, I don't think it adds to it to immediately jump off an election result with the angle of how can this possibly put more money in our pockets? And kind of that's the sour taste that's left whenever golfers start getting into the idea of what the election could possibly mean for a deal between the Saudis and the PGA Tour.
Yeah, he said obviously Trump has got a great relationship with Saudi Arabia. He's a lover of golf. So maybe, he said, who knows? I think that's the question. Nobody really knows, though, do they?
No, they certainly don't. But we're going to find out if Rex Hoggard knows a little bit more than some of us. Rex, do you think this is an example of where Rory might have been better off just saying, you know what, that's really got nothing to do with me, the election, we'll see how it goes, instead of implying, well, of course, Trump has a good relationship with Saudis. It's not necessarily a positive reflection on either side of that as well. Why would he choose to kind of weigh in on this kind of stuff?
I think, of course, he would have been better off just sidestepping the question. I think you see athletes in other sports who do it much better than Rory does, but that's not in his nature. You know that better than I do. You've covered him for a long time. He likes to be honest. He likes to be forthright, and he has ideas on a wide range of subjects. You just pointed out he covered a lot of ground in that interview that we just listened to, all the way from his swing to the presidential election. I would agree with you wholeheartedly with the idea that I would think the new president has a lot more on his plate than trying to bring professional golf back together, and certainly this probably isn't the time to talk about that. But in that instance, I think Rory did what Rory does best, and that's answer questions.
Yeah, he just to go back on the more basic golf stuff, Rex, he mentioned that the tinkering that he's been doing with his swing is to make it more efficient so it doesn't break down under pressure in key moments. We've obviously seen a little bit of that this season, especially you think back to the US Open. But again, sort of giving this information and telling the world about the changes that he's made and how hard he's been working, does that make him a little bit more vulnerable to speculation towards the end of the season?
I think so. And look, again, this goes to Rory's honesty. I don't know that I've ever asked him a question that he's just flat out refused to answer. In this particular case, I was pretty surprised by his answer. It's not that the fact that he's looking for some sort of answer with his golf swing. He always does that. That's in his DNA. I understand that. But you look at his strokes gain off the tee numbers, he's fourth. That's for this season. That's status quo for him going back a long time. Now, his iron game is a little bit off statistically to where it's been in recent years, but I don't see the problem in the full swing. I see the problem in his putting. In specific, just go to what's happened the last few weeks. He loses the BMW PGA in a playoff. Granted, to Billy Horschel, who made an eagle in a playoff, that's kind of hard to beat. But that kind of speaks to the pressure that you're under and you need to be able to convert those putts when you're in that situation. He loses the Irish Open by a stroke. Again, you're in that situation. You've given yourself a chance to win and you don't get it done. I imagine we're not having this conversation. If he makes, and I did the math on this, exactly 75 inches of putts over his final three holes at Pinehurst, I'm sure that we're having a much different conversation if he were to actually have won that U.S. Open. And the reason that he didn't win, you could probably sit and talk about his driving, his iron game, his short game, everything else, but it was those putts that cost him that title.
Rex, we heard Rory there mention a report in a British tabloid newspaper, The Sun, which suggested a deal has been done between the Saudis and the PGA Tour and that Rory and Tiger actually negotiated the deal. And pretty much it was what has been known in the background for months, recycled in a breathless manner to imply that there's something new when there wasn't. But it gets recycled and it gets picked up. And even nominally credible members of the media are saying, I wonder if this is true. I guess we'll find out. And you know, has golf media kind of got another stain on it after this past week? Because we're about to enter the annual period now where the live rumours start again, none of which are ever actually backed up by any facts, but they're recycled by people who are desperate to appear informed.
I mean, I think you and I are going to look at this the same way. First, you're going to look at the writer who broke that story. We both know the writer who broke that story and have respect for him. I think the other half of it is how would that writer know this information and who gains from this information being out? So my initial thought was someone is floating a trial balloon. Someone wants to get this information out there and see what the reaction is from the public. To answer your question, I don't know if it's necessarily golf media or just media in general that, yes, you see too many stories that don't have sources to them. You see too many stories with just outright speculation, obvious outright speculation. You see too many stories with outright mistakes, like this story had in it. And it speaks to what's going on right now in golf. You and I both know how close this circle is when it comes to these negotiations. So every time I see something in a headline or in a story, I'm always a little dubious because there's only a handful of people in the world that know exactly what's going on. And I doubt any of them want to be willing to talk to reporters right now about it.
And Rex, just from a bird's eye view right now, just for our viewers at home, with everything going on, of course, with the partnership between PGA Tour and the PIF and the PAC memo and the changes that could be coming to the PGA Tour, what matters to the fans right now? What matters to the viewers? Where should their focus be that actually maybe they can look forward to something and be excited about something in this game right now?
I always go back to the Monday after that U.S. Open I just referred to and the idea that I went to the Travelers Championship, but the most popular player, not the best player, I'm not making that argument, but the most popular player on the planet in that moment was at a live event in West Virginia. So one side, you have the PGA Tour playing a signature event at the Travelers Championship. They put up a lot of money to do this, but the most popular player is at another event. I think what the fans want to see is the best players together more often. I don't know if it's 100-player fields. I don't know if it's 72 player fields. I think that is something the tour needs to figure out. But if you want to cut it down to the most basic idea here, it's the top players, Rory McIlroy, Bryson DeChambeau, Scottie Scheffler, Xander Schauffele, all of these players going head-to-head at classic venues more often. And I think we don't have that right now. And we're not going to have that until the two sides come back together again.
Okay, Rex, thank you very much indeed. By the way, the ultimate bromance in golf, where's your other side of the crime? Where's your partner in crime today? That's what I'm trying to say.
I think he had a snuffly nose or some sort of ailment. I'm sure he's going to complain to me later about it when we do the podcast. Eye roll.
Pathetic. I didn't know you had a podcast, by the way. Shall we promote it? Let's go and do that. If you are in the market for more conversation just like this, be sure to take a listen to the Golf Channel podcast with Rex and Lav. And if you missed any of our show, check out the Golf Today podcast, which includes the best interviews from our show. And be sure to subscribe to the Golf Channel YouTube page.
Let's get a look at the latest PGA Tour University rankings. program that's offering playing opportunities to the college game's top players. And the number one person in these rankings following the NCAA championship in May will earn a PGA Tour card. And David Ford, North Carolina, retains that ranking right now with Jose Le Ballester, the U.S. amateur champion, in second place on that list. And speaking of college standouts, Ingrid Lindblad spent five seasons playing for the LSU Tigers and in the process became one of the most decorated golfers in school history.
Yeah, that's right, Eamon. Let's take a quick look at her bio, shall we? Because it is rather impressive. Just the record 15 wins at LSU, former world number one in the amateur ranking. She then ultimately turned pro in June of this year, moved on to the Epson Tour, won on the Epson Tour, and she now has punched her ticket to the LPGA Tour starting in 2025. So just earlier this year, she became one of 10 players to earn the LPGA Tour cards on the Epson Tour. Take a look at that. What a wonderful moment and rise to glory. So I'm so pleased to welcome in the legendary LSU Tiger herself, Ingrid Lindblad. So lovely to see you. And congratulations. What a successful turn of professional events that you've had already. Are you mentally sort of in the place where you're reflecting on the success that you've had this year, or are you already looking ahead to the opportunities to come?
I mean, a little bit of both. I feel like the summer was really quick, turning pro in beginning of June and then playing basically until a couple weeks ago. I don't feel like it's really like sunken in yet. But I'll do some planning and stuff in the next couple weeks and set up some goals for next year.
What has been the biggest adjustment for you, Ingrid, just in terms of moving into the professional ranks in the last few months?
I mean, basically, when you're in college, everything is kind of set up for you. You go to tournament, everything is, you know, everything's ready. And then turning pro, you kind of have to work everything out on your own. You can't just show up at a tournament. Like, there's so much else you have to do outside of the golf as well.
Well, you ultimately broke through on the Epson Tour in just your seventh start on that tour. You had a couple of top five finishes as well to eventually secure your card for the LPGA next season. Did you expect the success to come so quickly after turning professional?
I mean, I was hoping for it. The goal this year was to play the summer and fall on Epson and then get my card and move on to the LPGA. So that was for sure a goal. And then you just can't force golf. Like, it just, I feel like if I just kept playing my game, like, the success would come.
Do you feel added weight to perform so early in your professional career, Ingrid, given how decorated your career was as a college golfer?
I mean, yeah, I felt a lot of pressure the first tournament I played, and I think some people were just like, she's going to win, you know, right out of the gates, and, you know, she's going to get her tour card. And, I mean, it wasn't that easy. and then I kind of felt like I learned something every week and kind of got the hang of it eventually, and kind of took some pressure off myself, honestly.
Well, you did say that your plan was to spend the summer and the fall competing in Epson, get your LPGA Tour card. So you can check that box. What are the goals and expectations heading into the first full season on the LPGA Tour?
Ooh, I've gotten that a question a little bit the last couple of days. It would be really cool to win, but that's what I said on Epson as well, and I got out and missed a cut in the first event I played. So, but obviously, I think, you know, I don't think winning is that kind of a crazy goal, to be honest.
No, I don't think anybody would call you crazy, Ingrid, if you set yourself a goal to win on the LPGA next season. You could easily be a force to be reckoned with. Speaking of a force to be reckoned with and job perks, you had the pleasure of hanging out with a certain 7'1" Shaquille O'Neal recently, fellow LSU legend. Talk me through this meeting. What did you talk about with Shaq?
We didn't really say anything. I was kind of like, can I get a picture? And he didn't really say anything either. So we kind of just, I went on the field, and he's not that hard to spot. I mean, he's very tall. So it's not the first time I see him at a football game. But then I went out on the field and got received the Anika Award. So he was kind of just standing there by the sideline, and I was like, ooh, can I get a picture?
I think in a couple of years, Ingrid, he's going to be asking him to have a photo with you. Yeah. I just think that could be in the stars. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Your future is so bright. We can't wait to see what you do on the LPGA next year.
Thank you.
Have a lovely holiday season.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Alrighty, we'll stay with us here on Golf Today because we are taking you out to Los Cabos when Golf Today returns. Our very own Kira K. Dixon with more on what players are saying about potential PGA Tour changes. That's coming up next. PGA Tour is back in action this week for the Worldwide Technology Championship. Just a few events left in the FedEx Cup Fall, and you can catch live first-round coverage tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern time. So let's get out to our reporter on the ground this week and welcome in Kira K. Dixon. Kira, so much happening on the PGA Tour this week and some potentially big changes coming down the road. Just give us a sense of what you're hearing from players so far.
Yeah, some big changes indeed, Anna. The PGA Tour was off last week, but that doesn't mean they weren't very busy. The Players Advisory Council in particular with releasing a set of proposed changes that's going to be voted on by the PGA Tour Policy Board in just a few weeks. Now, some of those changes, proposed changes, include limiting the amount of fully eligible tour cards from 125 to 100, potentially getting rid of or limiting Monday qualifiers, changing the Korn Ferry Tour cards available at the end of the season from 30 to 20. And limiting field size. Now, as you can imagine, when change happens, lots of opinions happen as well. And we heard from a few Player Advisory Council members and players to give their insights on how their reaction has been.
It's something that's sensitive to a lot of guys and to me especially, just because it's different and change is sometimes not fun and not easy. However, I feel like we started this process from a really good, honest place about guys getting fair opportunity to play on the PGA Tour, where you present a guy a fully exempt card, but they're not really getting into tournaments, and that's not really fair. So we felt like we needed to look at this of equal and fair playing opportunities, so that was, you know, more equitable across the board in terms of points and tournaments entered. And when you look backwards, I think the tour potentially overpromised fully exempt cards and under-delivered playing opportunities. And so now I think moving forward, we're going to under-promise tour cards, but over-deliver in the playing opportunities in those categories and the conditional categories going forward.
Not speaking on behalf of the PAC, not speaking on behalf of the PGA Tour, for you personally, what are you most passionate about in these changes?
That's a good question. I definitely want strength of field to be number one, and I don't mean just in the top, I mean 1 through 130. And I think this provides that. Everyone's going to play a lot of golf, and the fields are going to be, the tournaments are going to be stacked. And that was what happened last year. That's why a lot of people didn't get in when we had 175 fully exempt members. You just, in your 130 person fields, it's just, the math just doesn't work. So I'm passionate that guys that earn their card will have full status, whether that's from Q School, whether that's from Korn Ferry or the DP World Tour, they will have. When they get their tour card, they will know that they're in these tournaments and they're not going to be fighting behind the eight ball, trying to get in events, trying to money qualify. I don't think that's fair. They've earned it, so they deserve to play.
I'd say these have been in the works for a number of years, actually. And they've just slowly kind of continued to show us data that this is what fans want, this is what sponsors want. It's that balance point of trying to keep top players happy, but keep competition primed for what that magic number should be to keep playing status out here. I'm probably at fault, a traditionalist, and was never really into taking away 20-30% of people's jobs out here. I always felt my role was to represent player 1 to 200 out here as a PAC member and a board member back a few years back. But it's something that is going to be tried, and I think it will probably be passed here in November, the end of November. But we'll just have to see. The priority has to be our fans. The priority has to be our product. Yeah. It's tough sometimes, too, because we're trying to do what's best for the tour, but we're also individuals performing and competing out here and trying to keep our jobs. So it's hard to kind of have the lens of long-term 20, 30 years of PGA Tour and future when you know your career is just a few more years or wherever we're all at individually. So that's kind of the tricky point in some of these dealings. But it's the way it's set up now, and we're going to try it and see how it works out.
we have elected players from this tour to make those type of decisions, and I'm completely fine putting my trust in their hands. And I also understand where I'm at on the totem pole. We have guys that are out here trying to do what's best for the tour, and what's been a really weird time over the last couple years, and the fact that the people are getting upset over or the Monday qualifiers or those last few spots in the fields, I don't quite understand it, because I've seen, or what I personally believe is that there's 5, 6, 7 guys that are out here that make the tour money that people want to tune in to watch, and there's hundreds of guys out here that, and I fall into that category of people that just don't always put the most exciting product on the golf course. So like, you've got your Rory McIlroys and Xander and Spieth and Scottie Scheffler. Like, those are guys that are driving this product. And as long as those guys are willing to tee it up, I feel like there's people that are going to be willing to watch, and trying to get all upset over leaving guys like me out of the field. Again, from the YouTube side, I enjoy that probably more than I do the PGA Tour now these days. And I wouldn't mind getting kicked off this tour based on performance. Now, some of their arguments over like pace of play and shrinking field sizes and the percentage of play that doesn't finish on Friday before the cut and all that, I think that's garbage. I feel like pace of play is always going to be slow out here. And because you're out here doing your job, you're playing for a lot of money, and these guys, they're just trying to do their best. And the pace of play side, I feel like, could be addressed in another way. But again, it feels like they're trying to like mask or come up with an excuse why you need to trim the numbers down. Really, you just need to kind of trim the fat just so that there's more people that you actually want to watch on the telecast.
And guys, I spoke with a member of the Players Advisory Council that said that he's had a lot of emotional conversations this week, and he said that the document that the players received outlining all of these changes was about 23 pages long. He said, I wish it was 50 pages long so that players could really dive deep into every single decision we made and why we made it. He said, I know that people are upset. We are directly taking food off of people's tables, but in the competitive environment that the PGA Tour finds itself, you absolutely have to adapt to maintain that competitive edge. Now, one of the pieces of maintaining a competitive product for the PGA Tour is a compelling fall series. We're currently in the fourth quarter of the 2024 fall series. This is the third to last event here in Cabo. You'll have two more events left, the Bermuda and then the RSM. So that means it's kind of do or die time for a lot of these players. You've got folks that are trying to get into that next 10 to hopefully crack the first two signature events of next season. Or on the opposite end of the spectrum, you've got guys that are trying to hold on to their cards and make it into that top 125 in the FedEx Cup. But here's some of the initial reaction to how the fall has been thus far.
I really want to play in Pebble and Riviera, and that's why I'm playing a lot this fall. Mm-hmm. Actually, I know that's why I'm playing a lot this fall. Mm-hmm. And those two tournaments are close to me. I've played well in both of them, and that's why I'm here. I'm here for Jackson and Vegas and all these tournaments, because that's what my goal is. This week with Worldwide Technology, they've been a partner of mine forever, and I would have been here regardless, but it's a great tournament. It's a great chance to move up the FedEx Cup and try to get in those tournaments.
Yeah. It's been fun. I've actually started to play some nice golf, which has helped. There's a couple things. Like, it's relatively disappointing that someone in my position that's trying to fight for my card for next year has not had all the opportunities to play, but again, at the end of the day, I still feel like I've got a tremendous opportunity out here with the PGA Tour to chase my dream and play golf for a living. So my complaints, they're not going to go far in the world. But as far as how the fall is going, I feel like it feels a little bit more rejuvenated from last year, where, I don't know, still trying to figure it out. Now people kind of understand that it's kind of like the race to the finish line to try and sort out those last few cards. So I've found it relatively compelling, and I got a lot of buds that are kind of like right there on that cutoff. So it's fun to watch them sweat it out a little bit.
Now, the two players that we just heard from, Keith Mitchell, he's currently 72nd in those FedEx Cup standings. He's looking to crack the top 60 and end up in that next 10 so that he can play in the first two signature events of next season. And then you have Wesley Bryan, who's currently 138. He's on the outside looking in of the top 125 to maintain full status out here on the PGA Tour. And a lot of points are up for grabs here in Cabo, the El Cardinal course at Diamante. This is a place that has very wide open fairways, huge green complexes, sloping greens, tons of wind, and what several players have told me is a lot of fun to play out here. So we will see how players fare come Thursday competition day.
Yeah, we will see how much fun will be had out there. Kira, thank you so much. As you say, it is time to go hard or go home, quite literally. So we will see you over the course of the week. Okay, well, you can catch that opening round of the Worldwide Technology Championship on Thursday, 2 p.m. Eastern. Before that, though, you've got the Lotte Championship on the LPGA. That's in Hawaii. That starts tonight at 7 p.m. Then some middle of the night golf in Abu Dhabi on the DP World Tour at 2 a.m. and the Charles Schwab Cup Championship at 5 p.m. Eastern tomorrow. Stay with us. More to come. One hour down and one hour to go on Golf Today. Some great guests in hour number two as major champion Padraig Harrington joins the show as he chases the Charles Schwab Cup. And another major winner, Brittany Lincecum, has announced she will be stepping away from the game. She joins to tell us what's next after golf.
Golf Today.
As we welcome you back into Golf Today, Anna Jackson, so pleased, believe it or not, to be alongside Eamon Lynch on this Wednesday. Eamon, we've got all the big tours back in action this week. I'm sort of looking at the PGA Tour champions because it is the season ender and there is so much on the line.
It really is crunch time, and guys have been playing their way into the mix in this over the last few weeks. Just over a week ago, Padraig Harrington closed with a final round of 567 to win the Simmons Bank Championship. That was part of the Charles Schwab Cup playoffs. It was his third victory of the season on the PGA Tour Champions. Finished at 17 under, and then with the win, he moved from 11th all the way up to 4th in the Schwab Cup standings, and that gives him a chance to win the Schwab Cup at this week's Tour Championship. And Padraig Harrington joins us now from Phoenix, where he's attempting to win the Charles Schwab Cup Championship this week. Padraig, 10 players enter the field this week with a mathematical chance of winning the season-long race. You trained as an accountant. Have you run the numbers yet on exactly what scenarios you need to come away with the title?
It's pretty clear for the guys in the top six. If we win outright, it doesn't matter who finishes second. So it's an unfortunate week to be Ernie Els at the top of the leaderboard. Normally you go into these things and you have a good advantage, you know, and a lot of things would have to conspire against you for you not to win. But in fairness, Ernie's coming into this. He's got to win it just like the rest of us. Nobody's going to get it easy this week.
Padraig, looking at the advantage that you have over the field this season on the Champions Tour is your distance. I mean, your quest for distance, your motivation and your drive to continue to get longer is pretty remarkable. What does your sort of training regime look like at this point? And just that motivation to keep improving in that way.
Yeah, look, the motivation to improve distance is so that I can compete with the young guys. You know, I was plenty long to be out here as I was, but I still have it in my head that I want to play regular events. And just because of my personality, I couldn't go up in a tournament and give something up to the field. It's, you know, there's plenty of people who are very straight hitters who've been shorter than average during their career, and they continue to be like that. But my personality wouldn't allow me to turn up. If the top guys are reaching a par five, I want to be able to reach a par five. So I need that potential, and that's why I've worked on my length. As regards doing it, I've been doing it a long time, so it's not an overnight thing. You know, I've been obsessed with it for 20 years at least, actually more. You know, nearly the whole time I've been on tour, I've wanted to hit it further. Remember, I grew up with a driving range that was 120 yards long, straight up a hill with a big side wind. So I never had the luxury of range balls and you know, a beautiful range, which we get in tour. So I'm still a kid in the candy shop when it comes to this. And I've always had this enthusiasm and optimism to get better. And like, I could be miserable. I could lose a tournament and be as miserable as can be. And the minute I start hitting shots on Monday morning, I'm excited. So that's my personality. And to be honest, it gets in the way at times. And like a week like this, it's going to get in the way. You know, this is not a week to be getting better. This is a week for trying to know your own game, for being consistent. And that's always the battle for all professionals. You know, we all want the potential of getting better and hitting perfect golf shots. But when you actually play on the golf course, consistency is more valued. For pretty much in a 72 holes tournament, consistency is everything, right? There might be one shot to a back right pin that you'd love to be able to feather in a high, you know, long iron and hit a 240 in the air or whatever it is, but that really doesn't win you tournaments. It's very nice, it's what drives us, but consistency is the key. And so for me, in a week like this, you know, it's all about getting my head in the game, you know, getting my routines right so that when I tee up on Thursday morning, I'm not in any sort of searching mode. I'm ready to go. As regards hitting it further, you know, the number one way to hit it further, yes, you should do all the gym work, you should do all the stretching, you should do all your technical work, you should have your training aids, yes. And probably the benefit of the training aids, you have to learn how to hit the ball harder psychologically. That is the biggest thing for golfers. They just don't want to hit it harder. You can go to the gym all day, get bigger and stronger, but if you don't take that to the golf course and actually hit the ball harder, it ain't going to transfer over. So you've just mentally, you know, I say it to every amateur every week, you know, you should be hitting 20 to 30 balls during the week, flat out, absolutely as hard as you can. And that's only just to keep you where you are. You know, that's to sort of not let you, you know, as players get older, you know, 50s and older, you're losing that speed. So at least hitting 20 to 30 balls a week, flat out, not caring where it goes, is going to help you maintain and maybe get better. And I say to the kids, look, the number one thing, and the kids have it covered, to be honest, but the number one thing, you know, when kids are teenagers, they need actually to be wild off the tee. They don't want to hit it straight. They want to be wild, because two things we're going to see in golf. Well, not two things. One thing we're seeing at the moment in golf is the game is being saturated with better swingers and better ball strikers, and the players are getting squeezed out of the game. But in 5-10 years time, when we have all great ball strikers and great swingers, the only thing that's going to differentiate those people is the players. So you've got to have that imagination. You will need, in 5 years time, you're going to need to be like Tiger Woods. You've got to strike the ball great, hit it miles, but you also got to have the imagination and the perseverance with it. And you know, that will come back into the game for sure, but certainly at the moment, you know, the game is more for the great swingers and ball strikers at this very moment.
Patrick, you've played 14 events this year on the PGA Tour Championship, won three of them, you've been top 10 in half of them. You've also played, I think it's 10 weeks between the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour. How long is that kind of split of commitment sustainable for you, do you think?
I started this year off, I got pneumonia. So I played 32 events last year, which was probably, for me, it might be four events too many, but I'm going to end up playing 30 every year. That's when you're trying to split your time, you end up maybe one or two more than you would if you were just on one tour. Half of those events, as I said, because of pneumonia, I played very poorly the first 6 months of the year. I won twice in the Champions Tour by putting really well. But I struggled. And at the Scottish Open, I shot around level par to miss the cut. And just was so far off the mark. Like I was, you know, I tried hard to shoot level par. It wasn't like, you know, I just wasn't near it. And right there, if you'd asked me on that Friday evening, I would have said, yeah, no, I'm probably just going to, I think I'll give this up and just concentrate on the Champions Tour. But then, like a lot of times in golf, I turned up next week at the Open. I was 10th in ball striking for the week. And I'm going, actually, I can still compete with these guys. And come September, I played Wentworth. I think I was second in ball strike and tee to green at Wentworth. So again, I'm looking at it and going, well, actually, I can compete. So I'm back to where I was at the start of the year, whereas next year, I'm basically going to play a mixed bag of tournaments. You know, I really like playing in the Champions Tour. It brings a lot of joy and comfort to be up at the top of the leaderboard and be in contention. But, you know, a win on a regular tour would be very special. So it's worth those miserable days of missing cuts, of being, you know, I can't explain to you how hard it is on your psyche when you're struggling around the golf course, on the cut line, in around the cut line, missing the cut line, finishing 60th in the event. That's really, really tough on how you feel about yourself. But I'm prepared to take that chance if I think I can get, you know, that one win across the line at 53 years of age would be a very special thing to do. So, yeah, pretty much going to be the same scenario next year. But I am aware that as I get older, I'll have less chances to win this Charles Schwab Cup. So the fact I'm in contention this week, you know, I want to take it when I can. That will be my attitude, because there's more good players coming on every year. You're losing a little bit of your advantage. So, yeah, you got to win these things when you're young.
You talk with so much passion, Podrick, about what you still want to achieve in the game. And I know you said recently that all the success that you have on the PGA Tour Champions can sometimes sort of fall into a false sense of confidence when it comes to competing against the young guys on the PGA Tour. But there is so much on the line this week on the PGA Tour Champions. And you do still see heartbreak at your level, sort of in your 50s at that age, just that top 36 get to keep their card into next season. How high do emotions run on the Champions Tour at this point when players are trying to keep their privileges?
Well, I hope I was misquoted in saying that I feel you can get overconfident out here. I actually like the fact that you can get in contention, because in the end of the day, whether you're on the Champions Tour or on the regular tour, if you're trying to win a tournament, you have to hit the shots down the stretch and you feel stressed and under pressure. It's a saturation point. So if I need to birdie the last this week, it'd be no different than if I needed birdie the last to win a PGA Tour event. As in, you still have to hit those shots. And I think the great thing about the Champions Tour is it gives me a few more opportunities to feel like that during the year. Whereas if I was playing regular golf, you know, you're getting it once or twice a year. And I would say this is one of the big issues. I know it's a strange issue in golf. It's so deep now on the PGA Tour. You know, outside of Scotty, Xander, Rory, there's not a lot of opportunities for other guys to win and to learn how to win. You know, I grew up probably in a great era where I was playing in Europe and I might get in contention 10, 12 times a year. And when you're doing that, I lost a lot, but I was learning all the time. And the Champions Tour is a little bit like that for me at the moment. I'm getting some opportunities. Like I won last week, but the two previous tournaments, I had a 3-shot lead in SAS and I lost it to Jerry Kelly, and the following week I was in the second last group 3 shots behind. So I'm in contention and learning. You don't always win, but I do appreciate the Champions Tour for putting me under pressure. I say it about the tour, the Champions Tour gives you an opportunity to relive your past glories. You get to hit shots down the stretch under pressure, people watching, but there is an element of those shots that when you hit them, they're reminding you of what you did in the past. They're reminding you of your best days, your glory days. So, you know, that's what the Champions Tour helps you relive what you've done. As regards the standard out here, and it's an extremely tight cut, 36. I didn't realise it because, you know, I think I'm seeing guys I'm familiar with now losing their cards who are out here. And the problem is 36, you don't get an exemption past 1 year if you win. So if you win, and then the following year, you don't play average. You just play average. You lose your card and you're not exempt to follow, you know. And unless you have some grandfathered in exemption, you know, you're gone. There is no way back in. There's so many people waiting to get into tournaments on the Champions Tour. You know, you got to go to tour school, which is 5 guys, or you got to, you know, it's hard to get any invites. It's deep here on the Champions Tour. So the guys actually work incredibly hard. You know, they know that they might have only a 3 or 4 year window, so they work really, really hard, surprisingly hard. Yes, they enjoy their life. It's a quicker week. It's a shorter week. You know, there's not as much, you know, the tee times are always middle of the day sort of thing. So it's a very pleasant way. But the guys practice really, really hard. That is a surprising thing. But I think it's because a lot of people, you know, when you got your PGA Tour card, I guarantee you went to every guy who gets his PGA Tour card. They think they're there for 10 years, 20 years. They don't see an end to their career. Whereas the guys in the Champions Tour know very, very well that this is their last run, that this is, you know, if they get 3-4 years out here, they're going to do very well. And, you know, if they get longer, you know, it basically means they're a star player out here.
Speaking of the difficulty of keeping tour cards, Padraig, the PGA Tour's policy board is going to vote in a couple of weeks on a slate of proposals that would include reducing field sizes, reducing the number of fully exempt players, minimising a lot of the Monday qualifiers. Do you think that's a good move for the tour to make it more cutthroat?
Terrible.
Or is it not a good move in your mind?
Just terrible. It really is. I'm, you know, I can't think how bad it is. You know, taking away, you know, in the end of the day, the people who are inside are voting to keep the thing tighter and more close. You know, sure, yeah, why don't we just have 12 people in the event if I'm included and everybody else can go home? It's just, you know, the tour was running just fine. Yeah, I know there's a little bit of pressure on time. To get fields finished when they go to 156 at certain times of the season, 144. But players will deal with that, will handle that. They're prepared to, you know, they know at the start of the year, hey, I might miss out in a few tournaments because of light. You know, we're always talking, like the only way to solve the slow play issue is like driving in rush hour traffic. It's there's too many people on the golf course and the tee times are too tight. So yes, this is a way of solving one of the big issues in golf, you know, the pace of play. But, you know, if you don't want to, you want to give everybody the opportunity. You know, if this was like Premiership and Championship and there really was a really, really good second tour, you know, maybe, you know, European Tour can be that. Yeah, maybe it works out. But to me, it definitely looks like, yeah, the people on the inside are going, hey, we'll keep it tighter. Not having a Monday qualifying. Come on, that's one of the most exciting things on the tour. The cut line is one of the most exciting things on the tour. It's a horrible thing, but Monday qualifying, the cut line, you know, cutting your exemption to 100 players or so, you know, I know no cut fields suit the sponsors in terms of they want to get the leading names guaranteed to be there on the weekend. And I'm going to say this, Eamon, about LIV. I'm sorry for bringing it up, but one of the big advantages of LIV is they're nearly guaranteed that their best players are going to be in contention on a Sunday afternoon. So it's very reliable, dependable. Similar to the Champions Tour, if you turn up and watch a Champions Tour event, you'll certainly know six of the top 10 players. You know, there's no doubt there'll be household names at the very top of the leaderboard that you're familiar with. LIV have that advantage. The tour are struggling with that. And this is why they're trying to get the better players into the same events so that they can be dependable. But then I've seen a few events this year where a player has gone out and won 156 man of field in a standalone tournament, not even an opposite field event. And people on social media are criticising, sure, we can't count that event. Sure, you know, it was only the best players weren't in it. To win a PGA Tour event against the other 156 players, I can tell you is such an achievement, as in everybody can play in it. But yeah, that is a problem. I've got to say, you know, tightening up fields is good for the TV. It's good for, you know, for dependability. But I think the system wasn't broken. Honestly, I really don't think the system was broken. So maybe if I was in that top 60, I'd be going, hey, this is great. But it seems if you're on the outside, it's not a very good move.
Yeah, it's a complex issue, Padraig, and one that we could probably sit with you for another hour and discuss. We really appreciate your time this week. Thank you so much for joining us on Golf Today. And good luck this week in your bid for the Charles Schwab Cup. Thank you so much.
You know what? I think I'll start a campaign now, bring back Monday qualifier. It's so easy. Come on.
Next time you come Monday on, wear the T-shirt, Padraig.
You don't have enough room in your schedule to play any of them, Padraig.
I realise I'm not turning up to Monday qualifier because I've had my career. But I'll judge people. When I look at a young pro and whether he's going to be successful, I'll judge him on if he just drives down the road to the local events, he's not really pushing himself. If he travels, Monday qualifies, goes to Asia, goes to South Africa, goes to Europe and goes to all those tour schools, I know that guy wants to make it. So it's a way of me separating people out. Really, do they really want to make it as a pro, or would they like to make it as a pro?
Yeah, it's a good point, and one that you feel very, very passionate about, as do we all. And we're going to continue to talk about it for the next couple of weeks until they make that decision. Padraig, thank you so much for your time. We'll see you very soon and good luck this week.
Thanks, guys.
Well, just a quick reminder of how strong Padraig Harrington has been on the PGA Tour Champions. He has won multiple titles on every season that he has been on the tour, including three this season. And he sits fourth in the standings heading into this week's Charles Schwab Championship. So he has a legitimate chance of taking home the cup.
Well, a two-time major champion recently announced that she's walking away, at least from full-time competition. Brittany Lincecum was about to join us to explain why. The time is now. We'll be right back. Continuing on Golf Today, back in 2009, Brittany Lincecum earned her first career major victory in dramatic fashion, an eagle on the 72nd hole to win the Chevron Championship by a single stroke. And 6 years later, deja vu all over again. More last hole heroics, another eagle. That one forced a playoff with Stacey Lewis that she went on to win on the third extra hole.
And it has been quite the career for Brittany Lincecum. Let's just remind ourselves of her bio. She turned pro back at the age of 19, spent almost 20 years as an LPGA Tour member. 8 wins in that time, highlighted, as Eamon just said, by those 2 major titles. She's been a veteran component of the US Solheim Cup team. Led the driving distance 2012 and 2014. Of course, she's affectionately known as Bam Bam. And it has been an amazing year. So Brittany took to social media earlier this week, saying it has been a great run, announcing that she would be retiring from the LPGA Tour following a remarkable 20-year career. So with that, I'm so pleased to welcome Brittany into the show. Brittany, congratulations on everything that you have achieved in this game. I'm sure next week is going to be an emotional one for you. But when you look back at your career, could you ever have imagined achieving so much that you have?
Absolutely not. You know, when I turned pro in 2004, my dad said, let's play for 10 years. Give me 10 years and then you can go do something different. And, 20 years later, here we are. It's been a great run. And the LPGA has been so wonderful to me. And it's hard to step away because I love it so much. But obviously, 2 littles at home, it's just getting a little bit too challenging. One is in kindergarten now. So just to kind of, be in their life and to be a mom, I'm ready.
Was there any one particular moment, Brittany, where everything crystallized and you thought, you know what, I want to do this, I want to be the at-home person now, not the inside the ropes person?
Yeah, super funny. Everyone says, you'll know when it's your time to step away. And I'm like, guys, I'm not ready. I'm not there yet. And then Emery started kindergarten this year, and I volunteered the first 2 weeks as the lunch lady, basically just throwing away trash for the kids. And I knew those weeks that I would rather be the lunch lady than out grinding and hitting golf balls on the driving range. So that's when I knew, and here we are. So I can't wait. It's just fun to be a part of her school and to be a part of her new little life, and it's been great.
Yeah, the mums of the LPGA Tour deserve so much respect. The juggle is real. I cannot even imagine touring the world at the level of professional athlete and raising 2 little girls as well. What have been the main challenges since you've had your girls of trying to balance both worlds?
She said, I did it, you can do it. Not realizing back then, she used to drive to a lot of tournaments, and now obviously our tournaments are very spread out, so we have to fly most places. But my parents have been a big help. Daycare on tour has obviously been a tremendous help in allowing me to do what I love and not have to, choose between either having children or playing golf. So they've allowed me to play extra years that I never thought I would play. So it's been great to bring them with me, especially Emery, the 5-year-old. She's been a few more places just to show her a little bit of the world. Obviously, I don't know if she'll remember any of it, but, we can look back on photos and times, and I can remind her, like, hey, you were here, you went there, you watched mommy play golf. So it's just a cool experience to be able to show them a little bit of what I, did for a living, and hopefully they remember it a little bit.
How many more opportunities will she have to watch mommy play golf? I mean, is this it? You're walking away after this last event, or are you going to play some kind of limited schedule?
Yeah, so I'm stepping away from full-time golf because I would like to play a few more. It's something I have done since the age of 9, so 30 years I've played golf. So to step away completely is a little scary. So I'm definitely going to play next week. My hometown, Pelican, one of my sponsors, you know, I'm so looking forward to that. It's going to be super emotional. I already, you know, I cried when they called me and told me I got the sponsor invite just because it means that much to me. But, you know, I'm in Chevron next year, just being a past champion. And then maybe I'll just pick one or two fun ones, you know, ones that I like to go to where I have fun housing, like Toledo or Arkansas. So it's kind of all up in the air, you know, obviously being a mom and enjoying my two kids and just seeing how much I'm going to want to practice in between there. If I'm not ready and I don't feel like I can compete, then, you know, I'll be done. But I'll probably still go to Chevron just because I love that event.
And looking at what might be down the road for you, Brittany, I mean, you're a six-time American Solheim Cupper. You were one of Stacey Lewis's assistant captains this year. Are you tempted by the thought of a potential U.S. captaincy down the road?
Potentially, you know, it's just getting a little taste for it this year. It was obviously very cool. Different, you know, the first couple of days I was kind of sad to not be the player anymore, but to be on the opposite side and to realize that I was still bringing value to the team, it was a very cool spot to be. So it was an honor to be an assistant captain with Stacey. She was obviously a fantastic leader, and just the team really just meshed well together. So it was cool to be a part of, and, you know, I would love to be an assistant, you know, a couple more times. And then if I'm honored enough to be a captain one day, that would be very cool. But even just to be an assistant, just to put on those red, white, and blue colors again, there's really nothing like it.
Brittany, you're 39 years old, a mom of two. You've been out there for 20 years. Do you think people like you are going to be a dying breed in future in the LPGA Tour, that you're going to see less players who are willing to stay out there and enjoy it as long as you have?
39, young, but yes, for sure. You know, you talk to, you see Lexi Thompson, you talk to Lydia Ko, you know, they're all like, gosh, you know, we're retiring in a couple of years. And I'm like, how old are you, still like in your 20s? I think, you know, people like myself, Julie Inkster, you know, they just don't play as long anymore. And I'm not sure why, because the game is going into such an amazing place. We're playing for more money. We're on TV, more network TV. We have more tournaments to play. The tour is just so much better than it is now than it was, you know, 20 years ago when I joined. So it's hard to walk away from, I think, but obviously girls have other thoughts. You know, Allie Ewing, she's retiring this year as well. So it's interesting to see, but I don't think you'll see many players, you know, to be out there 20 years anymore. It just doesn't seem to happen anymore.
Yeah, well, Brittany, we know you always love to fish more than you ever did practice, so you'll have plenty more time to do the things that you love, including spending more time with your beautiful little girls. So soak up all of next week. We're looking forward to seeing you out there, and thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.